the medium of content is now really driving forward these buying journeys for customers combined with peer-to-peer recommendations. And before, I would have just said, hey, it was word of mouth. But really, we are moving into this age of content.
Hello, team. Welcome to this episode of Confessions of a B2B Marketer. And today we're joined by Arthur Castillo, who is running dark social and evangelism at Chili Piper. So in this episode, we jump into what Arthur's calling field marketing 2.0. And this was a real gold in the episode. If you're going to events or if you're considering going to events and you're a B2B company, then you definitely need to listen to this. We also dig into a little bit more about why marketers should be focused more on revenue now, and then also a little bit about how Chili Piper are an awesome business. Now, before that, we have to give a massive shout out to our incredible sponsor, Hockey Stack. Now, what I want to talk to you today about is the LinkedIn campaign attribution. And so what Hockey Stack have actually enabled you to do is sign up, connect your LinkedIn ads account, connect your website. And essentially what's going to happen is that you'll be able to see, you'll be able to track the people that come to your site and that opt in, et cetera, on your site, back to impressions on a LinkedIn ad campaign. So what we're doing here is making dark social lighter. So let's say somebody came into your funnel, they bought, but you had no idea where they're from. Maybe you've asked them and they actually didn't know themselves. If you had Hockey Stack running, you'd be able to see which campaign, which ad they looked at in order or prior to coming to your site. And that is absolutely massive. So go to hockeystack.com. It'll be linked below. Check out the live demo and then let me know or let them know that I sent you. Now, let's jump into the chat with Arthur. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. It's an honor. I was creeping you a bit before this, and I saw how many incredible podcasts you've had the honor of growing. So it's cool to be on this one.
I appreciate that. I've probably hosted, 300 to 400, maybe more. And so hopefully this is going to be good. Arthur. But first to kick off, so I've seen you all over my LinkedIn feed with a new approach, I believe, to field marketing that we're going to dig into, I think, a bit later on. And what seems to me to be a very innovative strategy. But that's for later, because first we need to dig more into A, your job title on LinkedIn, and then B, your views and your thoughts around dark social. So first question is, obviously, anybody that doesn't know Chili Piper, will link below, go and check them out. I'm quite like intrigued by your guys' culture. So anyway, we'll get to that later as well. And I'm going to stop talking so much. So you recently put a post on LinkedIn about how you're changing the way you think about dark social. So I'd love just to kick off with that, if that's okay.
Yeah. Great place to start. So originally, I know it's been quite the buzzword these days and people are asking what the heck is dark social. And the post talked about how I typically would have said, what in true marketing fashion, it's another rebrand, right? It's word of mouth rebranded, with the dark aspect being that attribution software can really only tell you the last touch of that customer's journey, and they put all the weight into that. So that's how I typically explain it. I listened to Chris Walker on his podcast, and I think he was actually on the Challenger podcast, and he kind of pushed back on this notion of it's a rebrand of word of mouth. He's really big on self-reported attribution. And when you hear people talk about your brand or how they discovered you, I think the difference is the emphasis on content and their own journey in discovering that content, right? So, I mean, you mentioned it already at the beginning of this call. I've seen you all over LinkedIn. Maybe that's got you to check out Chili Piper and you've seen what we've done there. So I think the biggest difference is like the medium of content is now really driving forward these buying journeys for customers combined with peer-to-peer recommendations. And before I would have just said, hey, it was word of mouth, but really we are moving into this age of content in what's dominating and typically more and more natively in our feeds, wherever we happen to be doing social media, that's now starting to kind of dominate our mind share and maybe lead to reaching out to a peer and asking about a certain thing, maybe leading me to going onto your website and furthering more. So the biggest difference I'd say is rather than just relying on word of mouth, almost creating these word of mouth experiences through the content that you share.
The role of content in word of mouth is bringing around this new phenomenon called dark social. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, I think so. It just in terms of how people talk about when they actually ask, hey, where did you first hear about my company? It's, hey, I saw you on LinkedIn, or hey, I heard you through this podcast, or I was speaking with a bunch of peers and they kept bringing your company name up. I think that is the focus of where the buying triggers are starting to be generated. Obviously, the frequency at scale at which this happens, where we have daily avenues, whether it's through LinkedIn or Slack communities or whatever, to have access to these peers. But I think it's the sharing of content within these journeys and how much it's affecting these buyers who are wanting to do more and more the buying process on their own. So we need to feed them the content so that they can come to their own conclusions and maybe reach out to their peers for that final hump, push over the hump.
And for you then, because I believe your LinkedIn job title right now is Dark Social and Evangelism at Chili Piper. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes. Head of Dark Social and Evangelism.
Got it. And so this is like your full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think we might talk about it later, but starting up the field marketing department at Chili Piper, I feel like I've taken a little bit more of a dark social angle through field marketing and events, whereas maybe some people would have taken it more through communities or content, whatever it happened to be. So it's still rooted a little bit in our event strategy, but the idea is, how do we almost create these peer-to-peer environments, right? So it's not me standing up on stage and telling everybody how great Chili Piper is. It's actually coming with somebody that has the exact same title, that's going through the exact same challenges as they are, and they're coming out the other side with your product. If that message were to come from a peer, or in our case, a happy customer, to another peer, that's way more valuable than us, than anybody in our company standing up and singing the praises of Chili Piper. So that's what I've aimed to do in this role, is like, how do we create more of these environments where it can be this peer-to-peer networking, sharing, knowledge sharing, discussing of challenges and opportunities, and having it come more organically through their peers than a message from us.
And like, tactically, what does that actually mean though? Could you give an example?
Of course. Yeah. So one thing we've really doubled down on over the past probably year and a bit is these micro in-person executive dinners, 20 to 30 attendees, where we get them together. We try and create a theme around, and typically we do this by serving the people at the dinner as well, right? What is something that's top of mind for you right now? Often, 5 or 6 of them seem to have the same challenge or whatever is top of mind for them, and we use that as a discussion. Now, I think really where we try and create this peer-to-peer environment is how we seat them at these dinners. So typically, we're sitting our best prospects next to our best customers. And I think that's where we're trying to create this dark social peer-to-peer environment where any discussion that's happening, of course, we're maybe trying to give them a nudge into what we hope they discuss, but they're going to discuss whatever they want, especially at the VP and C-suite level. But just by putting a peer beside them, one that we know has been successful with their product, if it so happens that they happen to talk about whatever it is, inbound conversion, lead routing, sales and marketing alignment, we're hoping that maybe that customer starts talking to that prospect and saying, "Huh, well, we use Chili Piper for that. What do you use?" "Well, I don't." "Okay, maybe you should look into it." So those are an example of the types of environments we're hoping to create by bringing our customers together, obviously giving them a great night, but also getting them involved in terms of target accounts we have, and maybe in some cases in-off deals. That's been a really nice for us as well, where maybe they started to check out Chili Piper, it stalled a little bit, but hearing from their peers of what they were able to do, I've seen it reinvigorate deals and push them across the line. So that's been one example of how we aim to create kind of these peer-to-peer dark social environments.
I think that's absolutely genius. And I assume this can also tie in with your event strategy, because you can, when there's an event, all these people are going to be in town. I assume you guys organize a party or dinner to do this at that same location.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right there. In terms of how we've typically gone about it, for the major trade shows, we typically would take this three-pronged approach of exhibiting at the trade show, maybe having a larger offsite activation where, let's say, up to 200 people can kind of mingle, network, snacks and drinks, and then having a more targeted ABM, if you will. I know we like to toss out those terms of, okay, who do we know is going to be at this type of event, and can we get them more in an intimate setting where we can actually have these discussions and it's not just like blow by pleasantries type of thing. So that's what we would do for like major conferences like Inbound, Sastr, Dreamforce. We don't necessarily do that for all of our conferences. Then maybe it's a trade-off between, do we just host like an executive dinner? Do we try and do an offsite activation? Now we're even exploring eliminating exhibiting and maybe doing these offsite activations and executive dinners. So I'll report back on how that goes. But typically it's some mix of those three types of events that will play out when we do exhibit at a trade show.
It is going to be interesting to try and or to recalculate the ROI if you take out the big chunk of spend that you may be currently spending on exhibiting, right? I assume that's maybe the argument for taking that out.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. It's a huge, large upfront capital investment. Now, typically when we've measured in the past, let's say in 2022, we've kind of gone across all of these events, knowing that they play onto each other, right? Maybe it's somebody that we engage with at a booth and we say, hey, this has been a really conversation. We're actually having, I don't know, some sort of party tomorrow. Or by the way, we think you'd be a great fit for a bunch of CROs that are sitting down together and we're talking about this specific topic. So we're almost trying to create multiple touch points throughout this trade show experience where one is at the booth, maybe a little bit more solicitation. Another one is with their peers. And then maybe they can get into more in-depth conversations with that executive dinner. Now, we haven't really, it'd be really interesting to go back and see and attribute our own field marketing events to say, hey, is one working out more than the other? We've kind of known that a lot of these play into each other. But to your point, the trade show obviously is a big capital investment. And as we start talking more about field marketing 2.0 and I guess where we see the value in trade shows and even looking at some of our own numbers, can we afford to maybe trade off this large upfront capital investment, still have some of these offsite activations, capture content at the event? And if we look at it through a year's timeline of investments, is that going to net out maybe similar results that we saw in 2022 without having to exhibit at trade shows? I guess that's the hypothesis. We'll come back and report on that.
But I think one thing we might be missing is what you do at these events and the content that you're able to produce from that.
Yeah, that's been a little bit newer, and I guess adding on to our approach. And I think this is when we mentioned, or I mentioned to you, field marketing 2.0, that's how I see it. So first coming in from sales, they actually, oh man, it pains me to say this, but we were at this whole last touch attribution model to the point where we weren't even inviting sales to these trade shows. They said, Arthur, you have sales skills. Maybe bring a couple of people from partnerships, but you can probably pull this off, right? We want to give marketing the credit. Over time, we did change that. We got sales involved. Obviously, our events got much more successful. But I think on one hand, and I'll never forget, one sales rep said this, and I still laugh to this day, where he said, have you walked through the conference with Arthur? He's like, walking through the conference with Arthur is like going to church with my grandpa on Sunday. This guy knows everybody. So
yes.
Then it became more about, okay, why are we kind of gating Arthur just at our booth? Maybe he can just walk the floor. And this actually happened last year at Dreamforce where we did an exhibit. And it was me and our head of video. We were planted there and he said, why don't we start shooting some content? And we didn't really put a lot of thought into it. We didn't try and match up narrative. We saw a couple customers. We knew we'd be speaking with sales and marketing folks. We had a question for each of them. But it was fascinating to actually see people months down the line, both internally and externally, saying, hey, I caught your coverage of Dreamforce. Hey, you killed it at Dreamforce. Like, that was really entertaining. Hey, that one clip had me laughing for days. And now I'm thinking, huh, this is a little different than what we've traditionally done, where I feel like the shelf life of an event is typically just that day. There's a lot of prep and work that goes into it. We're all trying to reach out to people to get them to come by our booth. But after that, it kind of ends up until the next trade show. And speaking with some other folks, Nick Bennett, I heard Chris Walker say this time and time again, they were saying that the value of these events is this like conglomeration of talent that is coming together. And nobody seems to be taking advantage of this, of shooting content with them, maybe doing a couple of podcast episodes. So I had the luxury of maybe not necessarily being trained as a marketer or having a playbook. And this made a lot of sense to me. I was like, yeah, why aren't we? These are people that are getting flown down here that are very influential, if we can even do bits of content with them and post it back on our LinkedIn, I'm sure that'll have some good effects on us. So it really came from just, okay, we don't have a booth. How can we get creative? We started interviewing customers, but it was the feedback we got from that. And months after the trade show actually ended, people were even coming up to me at different events in December being like, hey, I got that Dreamforce coverage. I'm like, this is really extending the life of that huge investment we made back in Dreamforce. So how do we now start to build this into our field marketing playbook where it's not just the one day, but we're actually capturing content? And then our head of video had this idea of like, what if we're almost the curators of this trade show experience for those that don't happen to be there? And now we're almost creating some FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. And we've had tons of people say, oh man, I wish I was at that trade show. Looks like a great trade show, lots of cool speakers, whatnot. But that has now slowly started to become a big focus of my job when I guess I attend trade shows is not only the networking piece, but can we capture content at these events of our customers, of maybe some target accounts, of some major influential people, and at the same time, try and release it pretty quickly while the conference is going on. So people look to us as, hey, Chili Piper is almost curating this entire event for us. Maybe we even have some questions. Then we started getting into setting up this content at events where we're leading with a hypothesis or a narrative where we might say, hey, there's a bunch of marketers here where our hypothesis is that they might not be tying themselves to revenue and they're still pushing MQLs and leads into the funnel. Let's see. And now all of a sudden people are like interested to see the result of what these interviews are going to happen. Like, oh my gosh, how many marketers is he going to interview? Are they actually going to say, hey, we're not tied to revenue into leads? And is it going to fulfill this hypothesis that we had? So it's been really cool how it's evolved, but I think we got those early signals from the audience that this was pretty captivating, pretty entertaining to them, and obviously bringing eyeballs and impressions towards us that we started to build on it. And yeah, it's been a pretty fun part of my job so far.
So before you got into that thought leader, like having your own opinion, it's almost like Chili Piper and you were the like a journalist covering the event. And
yeah,
the upside of you doing that is you're going to meet all these people. And then also the brand is exposed as you distribute that content.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And in some cases, we're even capturing these videos and sending them to our SDR team to follow up and say, hey, by the way, Arthur from our team looks like he met up with your VP of marketing, caught some interesting content. And that was such a nice follow-up compared to, hey, heard somebody from your team came by our booth. Are you interested in a demo? Right. So it has helped in that sense create more unique opportunities to follow up after the trade show. But even I know it's led to like partnerships for us as well. So everybody's always looking at that net new revenue. We haven't been as focused on, let's say, customer marketing and expansion as we are now in 2023. But I'm sure if we look back, those interactions, it just helps people feel closer to brand. It makes the brand feel more human. I can't necessarily say, hey, I met with 10 customers and 8 out of 10 happened to expand because of this interaction. But yeah, as we're starting to see this strategy evolve, it really helps us in so many different facets that now we have the support of our leadership team and really the LinkedIn community being like, hey, what event are you guys going to go to next?
And I guess now even more people recognize you when you walk through the sales or marketing conference.
I will say for the first time ever, Tom, the last conference we were at Adobe Summit, we did get called out. Me and Nolan, we were walking the trade show looking for people to interview. And one guy said, hey, are you the guys that do content at events and throw it on LinkedIn? We're like, yes, we are. And he's like, let me go grab my VP of marketing. So it's cool. Yeah, exactly. We're like, this is great. And this has really only happened from us doing it at 3 trade shows. But I feel like we're already starting to develop this association, this brand of, hey, is Chili Piper going to be here? And will I get interviewed? So that's been pretty cool to see happen.
Got it. So you mentioned the narrative that you were going to explore at one of these events, which was marketers being tied to revenue. My question,
yes,
I think this is something that you have an opinion on, is why now more than ever should marketers be tied to revenue?
Yes and no. This is interesting. I had a conversation with Obed Durrani where he's thinking like, on one side, this is good, right? The job of marketing maybe traditionally has been almost to be this sales assistant, right? Oh, they need a presentation or they need emails of people to go cold outbounds and do sales to. Okay, well, marketing will step into that. I feel like now is maybe one of the most exciting times to be a marketer. On one hand, I think that the MQL playbook is being exposed And it sucks when marketing is like, hey, I crushed my lead goal of, I don't know, 3,000 leads. I pushed over 5,000 leads to sales, and sales is hitting maybe 50% of their quota. Gone are those days, right? It's conflicting KPIs. Just because marketing is successful in tossing over these leads doesn't mean that they're going to lead to anything. Not to mention, oftentimes the most expensive asset of any company is their sales team. So can you imagine, marketing is thinking they're killing it, and they're really, all they're doing is wasting the most expensive asset of a company, saying, hey, go talk to these people that probably will never end up buying. I think that's becoming more and more evident, and what's led to this whole sales and marketing alignment, right? Sales saying, hey, your leads suck, and marketing saying, hey, you've never followed up with them, type of thing. Now, on the other side, I don't think everything marketing should do, I think in some cases, they almost get misconstrued in terms of marketing doing digital sales. And then it becomes all about direct response and, hey, how quickly can we get them into the funnel? I don't think that's a good idea for marketing. And I think that defeats the purpose of marketing. To me, it's like, what is the message you're sending out to the mass market? In my mind, can you talk about the status quo and maybe tease out a desired future state to get people that are getting from point A to point B to think, huh, maybe there's a better way? To me, that's like one of many marketing jobs to do. It's not enough to just say, hey, I found an email and let me push it over to sales. So I don't want marketers to get stuck in a trap where everything has to be direct response and tied back to revenue, because then I think we're blurring the lines of like, are we just doing digital sales, direct response? Isn't that sales job? But at the same time, I think too often is that main marketing KPI a form fill, or maybe it's even a demo booked, but not enough marketers are looking down funnel to say, okay, that demo was booked. Did they even show up? And from our stats, it's pretty alarming. And I've heard some people call this the biggest unknown problem in B2B, is that for every 100 demos, that these are high intent, right? They've come on your website, they've said, hey, something is here, I'd like to speak to someone about potentially purchasing it. For every 100 demos, we see marketing teams only get maybe 30 of those in front of sales. So if you think about that, you're leaking out 50% of your high intent pipeline just because you can't get them in front of sales quick enough. But if your marketing KPIs, leads or form fills or demo booked, you're not really looking down funnel and saying, hey, did they actually have a meeting? Hey, did they have a second meeting? Hey, did it turn into close one revenue? So I think that part is really important. I think marketers need to look at the entire customer journey. We also need to see where our best customers are coming from and how can we double down on those programs and get more happy customers that are referring us. If you know that as a marketer, then you know what programs are working. And then you have more of a strategic seat at the table saying, hey, these are whatever, 5 campaigns that we've run. This one we're going to X out because it actually brought us 2 opportunities that didn't close, but this one over here looks like they're closing at a 30% win rate. That's pretty good. How do we do more of that, right? So I guess that's the caveat of like not blurring the lines too much to the point where marketing is just direct response. Everything is tied to revenue, but at the same time, knowing your role and looking further down funnel and just your main KPI of, cool, a lead submitted their email or a lead filled out a form or they even requested a demo. What's happening after that first initial touch, basically after marketing hands off the prospect or the customer to sales? That's where I think a lot of marketers can become more strategic partners and earn a seat at the table, because now they're following it all the way through revenue. And not only that, if you're a land and expand company, these are the customers that you should really be focusing on to see, hey, you use this product, but you might be a great fit for products 2 and 3. How do we get them closer to that, what I've heard being called second order revenue, right? That metric of like, oh, we've got them as a customer, but how quickly can we expand them across other product lines, which I think now in 2023 is becoming even more important.
Yeah, got it. So not necessarily having all marketers like their performance measured against revenue, but it seems like a lot of marketers now can be more aware of the revenue impacts of their actions.
It's always going to be a lagging indicator, right? Like they come into the funnel, it might, depending on your sales cycle, it might even be 6 to 12 months if you're in an enterprise sale before you can say, hey, I actually contributed to revenue. So there should be other, I guess, leading indicators or funnel metrics that you're looking at. to understand, okay, after they've gone through the whole sales process, what does that look like? Where did they originate from in terms of a marketing campaign? But yeah, I think it becomes dangerous when everything you're trying to do is get them, let's say, from point A to point B, which is, I never even knew of your company, and now I'm requesting a demo, or I'm supposed to be buying your product. There's different steps that need to take place. And I think if we keep saying tie ourselves to revenue, maybe we might start to forget those steps and really stop to like think and say, what is the job of marketing here? Is it just to get them to convert to revenue? Or again, are we doing digital sales? So yeah, there's a fine line there that marketers should be looking further down funnel, but not everything needs to be tied to revenue.
Makes total sense. Let's switch gears. As I mentioned, I'm curious about the company, Chili Piper. So you started as an account manager, moved into marketing, and then the current role, which I guess is kind of aligned with marketing. But what I find is that the best companies will, A, keep great talent around for a while, like years, and then also there's internal mobility, and so there's a lot of hiring from within. So you've clearly gone on this journey within the business. So my question is, what do you think enables Chili Piper to keep great people?
Yeah. Well, this is a good introspective question. I think coming into this role, I knew from a sales lens, I wanted to go to a company that had a really strong coaching and training culture. And at the time, I remember seeing Michael Tuso post on LinkedIn about it, and it just seemed like a really good culture. After I guess, got the job and even started speaking with other folks, this was the first time I ever heard of a company taking the onus on the success of their sales reps. And what I mean by that is they actually didn't even put them on a performance enhancement plan. They said, look, you passed our hectic, challenging interview process. We gave you the stamp of approval of you are the type of sales rep that we want at this company. And it's on us to extract what we know you can become. I've never seen that in any other company where it was like, we know you have what it takes. We're going to put it on our training and coaching to get the best out of you. We're not going to say, hey, this was a mistake on our end in terms of the hiring profile. So even that mindset shift of we're not necessarily hiring you for what you are now, but what you can become is so freaking empowering as an employee, right? Everybody kind of comes into it as imposter syndrome or, oh my gosh, what if I'm not as successful here? And they're telling you, hey, it's on us because we know you have all the raw materials and it's on us to get that out of you. That is super empowering. So I think even from the mindset of that perspective, you're given like this new, I don't know, empowerment, sense of liberty of like, I can go down this journey and not have to feel like my performance has to be tip-top shape 3 months in, otherwise I might be getting the boot. They're giving you this time to develop. I don't know who set the path for this, but there was a program right around when I started stepping into marketing. It was almost like this test drive program where if you had an interest maybe in a different department, you could test drive the role for 1 to 2 months before committing fully. And that's what I ended up doing. So I think they're just like very understanding of where you came in now might not be where you're trying to get to, or maybe your interests just change, or you have a conversation with a colleague and you say, wow, you're working on some really cool stuff over there. I'm intrigued. Like, I want to explore that further. So I guess it is a little bit ingrained in their DNA of like, we know wherever you kind of break into Chili Piper isn't going to be your end goal. And because of that, these different test drive programs, they let you experiment across the entire department. But I think there's also something to be said about the value. I'm trying to think, does this happen more in sales than in any other department? And I think it does. So they really value kind of the SDR, the AE role, where you're cutting your teeth in sales and understanding your buyer and knowing how the product works. I think they find that if you have that, that's going to help you in other areas of the business as well, whether it's in CS or in marketing. So I don't know. It's always been a little bit ingrained in that company DNA, and it's given me the liberty to explore this marketing career and hopefully make something good out of it. And I've seen a lot of other employees that have started out maybe as an SDR and yeah, have now come across to CS and they're really liking it as well.
Well, must be something going on that's great over there. Arthur, Yeah, I would definitely call this field marketing 2.0. I think this is the best thing I've taken away from this conversation. I was head of marketing at a B2B SaaS company we actually looked at Chili Piper. I don't think we bought you guys in the end. But this was back like 4 years ago. And I was responsible for events, and my event strategy was horrendous compared to what you were sharing today. So this is like the big thing for me. And the way you're then also using the events to leverage social, both on Chili Piper's and your own profile, I think is awesome. And so those were the key insights for me.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I've been lucky. I think, what is that classic quote where like luck is where preparation meets opportunity. I know we've done things a little bit untraditional here, maybe coming in and marketing, having this new revolution of not being kind of under sales wing and tying more of their efforts to revenue. Maybe it's a really good time to join, but I've been super lucky of like getting to experiment with this and being supported and all of that. So I'm glad that Field Marketing 2.0 is giving you new insights into maybe what you did in the past and how you can change it.
Sure. Okay, so we're going to link to Chili Piper below, obviously. We'll link to your personal LinkedIn profile below. Is there anything else we should link to?
Oh, gosh. There's a community that like we started, and funny enough, it was like helping marketers tie more of their impact to revenue. We're calling it Revenue Era. It's a pretty like smaller community. At first, we had huge plans, and I think over time, it's maybe 100 to 150 marketers that are just asking their questions in there. And me and Nick Bennett also have, if you're interested in maybe some of this field marketing 2.0 and how we've gone about it, a newsletter called The Marketing Evangelist that you can check out that gives you more tactical play-by-plays of what we're experimenting with in the field and how it's working out for us. So those are the other two links.
Love it. I didn't know about the newsletter, but I will get subscribed after this. Arthur, thank you so much for coming on.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, how was that? Big shout out to Arthur for coming on and sharing his wisdom. If you have any feedback for the show, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a rating and review. Here's one from Newtonian54. I got great insights into B2B marketing from Tom's impressive range of guests. Thank you so much. Here's another one. Huge insights and must-listen show for every marketer in the business. That's from JMMCG87. Now, if you don't want to be anonymous, you can screenshot the review, ping it to me in a LinkedIn DM, send it to me via email, and I'll get you and your business a shout out in the outro to the show. So thanks to Arthur, thanks to Hockey Stack, and of course, thanks to you for listening.